Yo, I'm Shay Serrano.
And I'm Brandon Jinx Jenkins.
We have a new show called No Skips with Jinx and Shay. In it, we discuss the most unskippable albums in hip-hop history.
New episodes drop on Thursdays, only on Spotify.
It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays, all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. We're also brought to you by TheRinger.com as well as the Ringer Podcast Network, where you can find a great podcast called The Ryan Russillo Podcast, which is only going up twice this week because we stole him for a special Father's Day two-parter. Part one is already up. Part two, we were hoping Sixers-Hawks Game 7 would be fun. Our hopes were correct, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Nets-Bucks series and a holy shit Eastern Conference Finals, Hawks Bucks. It's all next for Pearl Jam. All right, Russillo is still here. We just watched the death of the process. The process was given last rites about 20 minutes ago. We're taping this. It is almost 8 o'clock Sunday night Pacific time. The process passed away about 15 minutes ago as Ben Simmons was subbed out with about 2 minutes left with his team down 4 points. One of the most shocking Game 7 losses I've ever watched. That wasn't shocking at all. You texted me during the game, I think early in the third quarter, and you were like, I'm convinced Philly is going to lose, or I really genuinely think Philly is going to lose, something like that. And I completely agreed with you. Atlanta wins, even though Trae Young comes within one field goal of matching Kobe's iconic 6-for-24. He goes 5-for-23. Bogdanovich gives them nothing. And yet this becomes the Kevin Huerter game. And more importantly, this was Ben Simmons's last game ever for the Philadelphia 76ers. He will not be on the team next year is my prediction. What's your biggest takeaway?
Two things. And I have a million things, so I'm going to try not to go forever because I know we have a lot of space here.
Yeah, let's go rapid fire back and forth. We'll step it up. This is why we're the pros.
I don't know that I can do this. All right.
We got it.
For 48 hours, I've been thinking about these two teams. And I've been thinking about anybody that's played in a huge game. And there's two kinds of people. The people that can't wait to get out there and play in a game seven, and the people that dread it. And there's a lot of people that dread it. And the one guy that I thought was looking forward to it the most was Trae Young. Like, I don't think there's any doubt. Now, granted, he was terrible for most of the game. He couldn't shoot it, but when it mattered late, he was incredible. And the other part of it is I'm still kind of sitting here in disbelief, yet not remotely surprised. It's both things. Like, I can't believe Philadelphia lost to the Hawks, but yet we've had 4 years of evidence that when it comes to the playoffs, in those big crunch time offensive moments, they're just not good enough. And even though I felt like there was a chance they were better this year, let's face it, I picked the Sixers because I thought, well, I'm not going to pick the Nets and the Nets could get hurt anyway. But I didn't love it. I didn't really love any of the options as we got closer to it. But I'm sitting here kind of in disbelief. But the basketball part of us that have watched these games for decades, Trae Young was the most confident, the toughest, the most comfortable player throughout all seven games, and Huerter carried him offensively, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that any of us should be surprised, because almost anyone that was arguing pro Philly all of these years, like, no, it's great, Ben and Joel can play together, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, they were emotionally attached to the argument.
I had a Bucks Sixer, a Bucks Hawks parlay for round two. That was 6-1.
No kidding.
And I could have gone against it. I'm not bragging about that, because the Nets, knowing now what we know about that Nets Bucks series, which we're going to talk about later, even if Kyrie plays, the Nets win that series, much less if Kyrie and Harden play.
Real quick, I mean, if we learn anything here, like, if the Nets had been healthy,
oh my God, this would have been a wrap. Yeah, wrap and a half. But anyway, I had a chance to hedge against the Hawks thing today. And you could do Sixers money line, you could try to do teases. I didn't even consider hedging, because I genuinely thought Atlanta could win if Trae Young played well. And then Trae Young doesn't play well, and they still win. He was, 1-for-13 in the first half? This Philly team just looks broken to me. And it's been lurking here for years. The Simmons-Embiid thing, you and I have discussed ad nauseum. And Simmons just looks scared to me. The iconic play, and the play that will be the meme for the entire Ben Simmons process era, is going to be him passing up a dunk so he could pass to Thibault in traffic. Get a dunk. And he just, not only did he not want to dunk, he didn't want to get fouled. And you could hear the Sixers fans booing and groaning. This is a home game for them. There's 3 minutes left. And then you compare it to the other side, Trae Young. They're up 3. I think there's 2.5 minutes left. And at that point, he's 4-for-22. And he takes a 32-footer and makes it. And
it was bad. I don't think it was 4-for-22, because
that was the last shot he took. That was it, I think. He was 4-for-22. And that made it 5-for-23.
Yeah, that's right. 5-for-23. Because he was 9-11 for the free throw line, because you're like, oh, he ended up with 21. I mean, he was missing everything. I think he was 0-7 to start the game.
He was getting good shots and missing them. And if it was weird, because if you're rooting for the Hawks at halftime, you're going, I can't believe we got that half from Trae and we're still in this. And if you're a Sixers fan, you're like, wait a second, Trey's off tonight. We should have this. What are they going to do? It's going to be Herter and Gallinari unless Trae gets going. And Trae never really got going, and it didn't really matter. I just felt like Doc had no feel for this team the whole season. We could talk about some of the fundamental roster stuff, but where was Korkmaz down the stretch? At least it seemed like he wasn't afraid to shoot threes. I just would have surrounded Embiid with shooters, and the fundamental shadow over this team and this season and the whole process is Simmons shouldn't have been playing in the last 6 minutes. They should have taken him out. I am a huge Ben Simmons defender. I thought Houston should have traded Harden and got Simmons back in the package, but he just couldn't be out there in the last 6 minutes. And I think Doc was afraid to bench him, honestly. I think he's too big of a star, and you don't want to be like, all right, I'm going to bench the second best player on my team because this is the only way I can win the game. And he wouldn't do it.
Couple numbers for you. Embiid, 16 turnovers in back-to-back playoff games. The first time that's ever happened. 8-plus turnovers in back-to-back playoff games since 1984.
Oof. But can I say one thing on that?
Yeah.
They're asking him to be,
I'm with you.
You know, the main creator. They're giving him the ball 20 feet from the basket, and he's supposed to create their entire offense. They weren't posting him up. And I didn't think he was 100% healthy either, but it was like they had no other options.
I don't have a problem with Embiid. You're not going to hear me trash Embiid at all. I'm just bringing that number up because it's a big deal, but there's a reason why that happens. That regular season playoff thing that we've seen, nobody's even going to want to win defensive player of the year again. because Ben Simmons is the best thing that's happened to Rudy Gobert probably all year long. When I think about offenses that work, I thought Van Gundy had a great point in that Phoenix game. He goes, you know what? I don't know if we're ready to start printing up t-shirts that says the mid-range is back. But he goes, this entire defensive concept in the NBA now for years is protect the rim, run them off the three-point line. Well, you actually need somebody that can kind of live with those mid-range jumpers, whether it's Durant, Kawhi Leonard, a guy like Devin Booker, obviously Chris Paul. There's a few other names in there. I mean, it's not mandatory, but it changes things. The other problem for Philadelphia is, forget the mid-range thing, as you said with Embiid, their primary offensive thing that they do is they have Simmons sort of pretend he's in the offense, and they run some sort of handoff action where it ends up with the Seth Curry Embiid two-man game. Now, Seth actually shot the hell out of the ball, set a playoff record for an entire playoff season from three. But to have Embiid, how many times can you have a guy his size facing the basket 17, 15 feet away And I think with the double bigs with Capella and Collins, it makes it a little tougher to just go straight deep post. But you're asking Embiid to basically like, hey, we ran all this fake shit. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about their offense. It's action into inaction. We ran all this stuff, and now Embiid, it's you with 12 seconds. So figure it out, buddy. And
yeah,
that's just too much. And I don't know. Look, I think it's a combination of roster structure, but we just spent the first podcast praising the hell out of Ty Lue. I defend Doc all the time, way more than you do, but this is kind of indefensible to not at least try some different things here. And they run the same thing with Ben, Seth, Embiid, and it becomes really stagnant. And then everybody's waiting around for Embiid to save their ass every possession. And it's just not sustainable against good teams.
They're running the 2011 Mavericks offense that Dallas was running with Dirk, who was one of the three greatest scoring forwards we've ever had in our lives and had completely mastered the top of the foul line and what to do in every single situation. If you're going to single him, if you're going to double him, whatever, he had an answer.
They still had a couple drivers. You know what I mean? Like, who actually can put the ball on the floor?
I mean, Philly had Maxey. They had... They try to get Maxey.
Think
to go
about
to the
what
rim.
You're
he
asking.
Out of control. I know.
You're asking like, where's Cork Moss? And they had Maxey. Okay, that's what you're asking.
I just feel like they put Embiid in a tough situation, especially because he obviously wasn't healthy. The Embiid we watched in the first half of the season would have overpowered John Collins. He couldn't. And I mean, the Simmons thing. Again, I think we were two of Simmons's bigger defenders.
No, I wasn't.
Well, he was 2 for 4 and 1 for 2 from the free throw line when he got intentionally fouled. He played 36 minutes. Do you know how hard it is to play 36 minutes and take 4 shots? Like, how irrelevant you have to be offensively? And he had, what did he have, 13 assists? It's just like, we see this every year in the playoffs. The playoffs slow down. It's just the way it goes. You're not getting transition anymore. You're not getting those coast to coast in February against the Orlando Magic.
Well, you are if Philly's not getting back on defense.
Well, you are if you're playing Philadelphia. But if you're Philadelphia, yeah, they didn't get back how many times? How many Trae Young half-court passes?
You're ready for the place to explode. And that's what I love from Trae. Is Trey's like, oh, really? You guys are like out here celebrating? All right, Collins is back there. I'm just going to whip it ahead here. So keep going.
Well, it's just... the playoffs are different. They never solved the half-court thing other than Embiid had to bail them out over and over again. And Harris had one of the worst 8-for-24s I've ever seen in my life because all of those shots were good shots. They were
What's up
rim,
with him in the layups?
Nine-foot bankers, and it was every time it was alligator arms. It was front of the rim. It was off the backboard too hard. He was all over the map. They needed him to play a good game. The Hawks... no, Bogdanovich, I don't think the announcers like weren't focused on that enough. Bogdanovich was their second best player for a playoff series and a half. And this came down to basically Collins, Herter, Young, Capella. And then who was the fifth?
Danilo hit a couple big shots.
So
and that
basically
was one of their...
Herter had to fill the Bogdanovich stats, which he somehow managed to do with miraculous game 7 by him. But just losing that second ball handler, you would have thought would have killed Atlanta, and it did not.
No, because Herter can do a lot more than you realize. Like, there were times where you thought, like, oh, Herter's not going to close the game now that they have these other guys out there. And if you watch, you'd be like, oh, wait, like, they're staying with Herter. I mean, Herter doesn't just make shots. He had, like, a paint jump hook floater that was incredible. And Thybul, I mean, the biggest play of the game was Thybul fouling.
Oh, on the three.
You know, yeah, they're down one. There's still plenty of time left. And Thybul, who actually all season long, I thought one of the greatest traits of him was one of the few guys who could contest shooters and have enough body control to contest and not foul all the time. And he hits him in the back of the head. I mean, he knew it immediately. Shocking he didn't complain. And then, you know, Herter, he didn't care. He's been made fun of his entire life. Drains all three free throws like it's nothing. It's a four-point game.
He looked paler than ever.
Yeah, he was almost like...
I don't think he ever looked more pale.
Did you guys want to make it more challenging? Because this is going to be too easy. I mean, then there's another play in there. As everything's falling apart, like Simmons and Trae have that almost turnover in the corner, and Simmons' second time is fighting over the loose ball. Like, Ben, who gives a shit? Cool. You guys are grappling over the basketball again. You're showing more effort with this than any other thing you're doing on offense.
Yeah, go to the basket like this.
I think he had zero field goal attempts in the last four fourth quarters. And then they're up excuse me, Atlanta's up, but they're inbounding, but it's still like 40 or 35 seconds left about there. You know, so the shot clock is still in play. And then Philly fouls again. And then Doc is on the sideline going like, what the hell is happening? But I think you you pointed it out too. Like the whole thing's a mess. We could just keep going on and on and on. The Simmons passing up the dunk and then was seeing the other angle of Embiid being like, what the fuck? What is he doing? That's one of those all-timer moments. That's going to be one of those Philadelphia talk radio moments that's going to live for decades. Seriously.
I screenshotted the game with 4:24 left in the third quarter. Hawks 64, Philly 63. Ben Simmons was 2 for 4 at that point. So he didn't take a shot for the last 16 minutes. I mean,
so that's 4 games in a row, I believe.
But it's more than a fourth quarter. It was like Embiid didn't even play for part of that. Not only was he afraid to shoot, he was just afraid to go to the basket. And I felt like he had matchup advantages going to the basket. He was one of the best athletes on the floor. But after the game, I was immediately on 3 different trade. Like, I was in a legitimate text thread with Celtics fans about, could we get Ben Simmons for Smart and Thompson? Would you do that? That's how far his trade value has fallen. He was the centerpiece of a
I don't know Harden. That it's fallen that far.
I was just asking the question. Could we pull this off? Smart and Thompson, you know, Smart's a leader. We need to get tougher.
Was the text thread Wick Grosbeck and Rich Gotham?
My point is, so you actually think he will end up fetching more than people would think. Now, he is a clutch guy. Clutch is going to play a role in where he goes. He's not going to be going to Cleveland, I would guess.
My rule is this. In the moment, everything is too much. In the moment, minutes after we just saw this, as bad as it is, and it's real, I still hold out a little bit of hope that him away from, you know, a huge old school center would open things up for him. I think we've seen it when they've been split up or when Embiid's been hurt, but the record isn't very good for Philadelphia when that happens. But his mental approach to the game right now is going to be that I don't even want to hear about jump shooting. He's never going to take shots, but something is going on upstairs with him that gets you to pass there. So yes, I think all of us looking at it right now, it's hard to be positive about any of it, but in the moment is when we make our mistakes. Things are the best or the worst. Things are irreparable. People are untradeable. All these things. Yeah, but
in this case, this tapped into the deepest, darkest fears of Philly fans. This was the way this played out, Game 5 and Game 7, was the lurking nightmare that they woke up thinking about at 3:20 in the morning. It's like, honey, what's wrong? Nothing. I just had a dream that we blew a 25-point lead at home and Ben Simmons looked like he was shitting in his pants for the last 4 minutes of the game. I'm just going to go get a glass of water. I'll be right back. This was it. This was what they were worried about this entire time, that when push came to shove and the game slowed down and the spotlight got super bright, these two guys can't play together. And they cannot. That's the verdict. You're not winning a title with these two guys. I listen, but old friend Mike Lombardi, he does an NFL podcast, but he's like a diehard Sixers fan. And in his last podcast at the end, he talked about the Sixers. And Adnan just let him rant for 3 minutes. And he was basically like, we're going to lose. This team can never win a title. And he's like, this is about culture. The process is about culture. I'm paraphrasing. Sorry, Mike. And he's just like, when you build something where you treat everybody like assets, you don't try to develop any sort of winning identity at all. And then you reward people when they haven't done anything. What are you building? He's like, they gave Embiid a max contract when he couldn't stay on the court. They gave Simmons a giant contract when he can't shoot and doesn't seem interested in learning how to shoot free throws. It's like you're rewarding players that haven't done anything and you're creating this culture where it's just everybody's a success when you're not a success. And it's like, what is the process? We never made right. He had this great rant. I encourage people to listen to it. But I agreed. It's like, we celebrate the process. What did it lead to? They never got out of round 2. They had 100 top 5 picks.
Okay, I agreed with a lot right until you get to the contract stuff, because Embiid's a max guy.
No,
on
I know,
the
I get
market,
it.
And Simmons at that point was a max guy. But you're
you
right.
You have to do the money. I get it.
The process thing is really weird because I felt like it become like a real. It was like a cultural war. It wasn't a land right. war. It was, you know, I think people that are heavy into the analytics. And, you know, looking at it like, oh, I used to work in asset management, and now I'm doing this. And Hinkie was a genius. And I think Hinkie did a lot of really good things. But then I'd read other Hinkie commentary with interviews, and I'd be like, that's excessive. Like, I feel like Hinkie gave you that quote because he wanted to seem like this really, really out there guy. That was impressive. And I like Sam. I don't know him that well. We don't have any relationship now, but in the couple times I ran into him, he was really cool. And he was actually like way more open. And I was kind of like, man, you should be talking more. And that could have potentially saved him if he knew how to play the game a little bit more. But then it became this kind of divisive deal where if you didn't trust the process, you were an asshole.
Or you weren't. You know? No, you weren't smart.
Yeah, you weren't smart is really what it was.
Yeah, you're dumb. Smart. You don't get it. You don't get what the process is. It was like, I do get it. I just don't think you should lose for four straight years.
I still thought they had a chance to come out of the East because I liked other bigs. I thought that they did better job overhauling the roster. I mean, they still had 20-point leads in four of the games. One of them was actually 18, but that's four games where they had 18 or more point leads, and they lost two of them. So Philadelphia is still with their flaws, which is the lesson of this entire playoff when we're done with a champ here, which I think Atlanta, which I want to get to here at some point, because I think they have a real chance to win this whole thing, which seems crazy to say, and they deserve more credit. But when you're Philly and you're on year eight of this stuff, and Trae Young in his third year just went further than you and eliminated you in your own place, like, I don't want to be called an idiot if I'm not buying into the process 100%. And you know, I think the Ben Joel debate was one of the things that it was like the divider line. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, well, wait a minute, where are you and Joel in bed? You know they can play together, right? You know they can. And you'd be like, I don't know. But they could still win some games. They were one seed this year, but I don't know. I mean, maybe. But maybe they win and they still don't look good together. You know what I mean? Because that would have been the weird thing that we brought up months ago is they could have, you know, look, a couple bounces here, there, they win this one. Who knows against Milwaukee? What if Philadelphia were to win it all? Does it mean that it worked? Because it hasn't worked for 4 years.
Here's the defense of the process. If they just stay at three in 2017 and take Jason Tatum, the process looks brilliant. Because Tatum is exactly what they need, right? It's like a much, much higher level Tobias Harris, who somebody at the end of these games, now you'd have two guys you could go to. And you could probably get away with playing Simmons with those two. But they did the Fultz thing, and that fucked it up.
The Fultz thing, you're absolutely right, because, you know, the process, if you add up all the picks and then what you ended up with, to end up with two foundational pieces is actually really good. But now we're learning that Simmons isn't that foundational piece. But we've
See, this is where I got to push back, not on you, just in general. I haven't given up on Ben Simmons. I just want to see him go to a team that's his team. He's like basically the out of the box five. Everything runs through him. He's a center on defense, but he's floating around and just it's his team. And if they go 33-49 for 2 years, great. But let him learn how to be the guy. Whatever situation they're in here, he's been kind of reinvented as like he's this defensive ace who's a zero on offense in fourth quarters when you actually need him.
Yeah, if he's the focal point of your offense and he's dribbling around and like creating stuff, and just because there's more space, like I don't necessarily see it happening. I mean, he missed
you
more
could
free
if he's
throws.
On Orlando. Like, let's say Orlando's like, cool, we'll roll the dice with Ben Simmons. You can have one of our first round picks that we got in that Chicago trade, and we'll give you something else. Cool, we'll take him.
Okay, so what are we talking about? We're talking about somebody then, because, I mean, at one point you're trying to figure out, like, is this guy an all-NBA? Like, that's the projection for him. Is he going to be a top 10 player? That's all that stuff that was happening back then. And I think at this point you'd be thrilled if he's, like, the second best player on a decent team, you know? Because he's still the second best player on this team. I mean,
well, Seth Curry ended up being the second.
Not when it mattered. Certainly not when it mattered.
How about this? Imagine if they didn't trade Curry for Richardson.
Oh my gosh.
What would the team look like? Well, anyway, I don't think Simmons is going to be here. That was a devastating, devastating loss. Can we take a break and talk about the Hawks?
No, I want to talk about the Hawks, but I do want to ask you this because it's a good point that you touched on. Fultz blowing up and going from like surefire number one pick all season long, even though, you know, there were some teams that were like, look, if you watch them in some of the international stuff, that's why everybody was so on him. And then by the time, you know, going into the physical and the pre-draft stuff, there were some concerns, but most teams would have taken him one. That's devastating. And then the Zaire Smith-Bridges trade is ridiculous. I mean, didn't Bridges' mom work for the Sixers and they still traded him? So
it's retroactively worse than it was. I do feel like a year into Bridges' career, you probably could have traded for him pretty easily. Like about a year and a half into his career, I don't know how high his value was. I think he's
And this part of it's kind of irrelevant if we're going over draft misses here or there. The problem is, hey, you were the one seed. You were at home. It's year three with Trae Young. This team is basically like 3 months old in this version of it. Maybe more than that. Let's go March, April, May, June. Yeah, so 4 months old. And you lost at home. And they looked like they had zero fear. And you guys looked like you had that same fear we've been seeing for years.
2018, they lose the Celtics series. That they had a better team. And it, they lost mostly because Embiid wasn't in shape. And that team just hadn't been there before. They weren't ready for it. And Boston just kind of outthought, outcoached them. And kind of stole the series, right? 2019 is their best chance because Jimmy's there. And, you know, Kawhi plays one of the great games and knocks him out. And now you look at this year, this was not, I think probably out of those three teams, this was definitely not the best. This was their best chance, just the way the season had broken. But it wasn't, there was something wrong with the Sixers team. You could see it during these playoff games. Atlanta's not exactly a juggernaut, but they just didn't look right. And it's a missed opportunity. If there's ever a year to make the final four of the NBA playoffs, which we're going to talk about right after this break, this was the year. Let's talk Hawks and that right after the break. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. Closing the deal can be a real challenge sometimes. Like, remember when the Celtics, once upon a time, could have traded Kevin McHale for Sam Perkins and Detlef Schrempf to Dallas? It became a big what if because it would have made the Celtics younger, it would have made them better, but they also would have broken up the big three. They would have broken up Bird and Parrish and McHale. So would we have won the title if we did that trade? Probably not. I'm kind of glad they kept Kevin McHale, but you know, we lost out on a chance to really get younger. You know, another place where it could be a struggle to get a win, not just with trades, B2B selling. But luckily, you can use LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's a sales intelligence platform that helps you target the right customers to drive revenue and grow your business so you can start selling like a superstar. Maybe Detlef Schrempf would have become a superstar in the Celtics. We'll never know. Try LinkedIn Sales Navigator now with a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. Quickly on the Hawks, did that game make you like Trae Young more or less? Because I actually kind of like him even a little bit more because he was terrible, but I never felt like he lost his confidence. We've seen guys in situations like that, especially when you get to like 2-for-16, 2-for-15, 4 turnovers, a technical. We've seen guys just exit stage right or just change how they play or hot potato it. The confidence that he had in the last 5 minutes was, I just think that's who he is. To me, I learned tonight, you can hit Trae Young with a 2x4 and he's going to get up.
I'm with you. You know, I have to separate the two things, but I've definitely learned through the Knicks series and 10 times more than that in this Philly series that, you know, you're just not going to get to him. I mean, he's going to miss some shots. He's going to make some decisions here and there that you don't always love, but that's pretty much everybody that has the basketball the entire game. And he wasn't very good, but he never showed any signs that he doubted himself, where Philly's walking around waiting to lose and Trae Young's out there expecting to win. And that made me respect him a lot more. So I hate the fouling. Everybody knows it. I talk about it constantly.
He did it to Dwight. He did the jump in front of Dwight and almost got.
I thought Dwight kind of ran him over on that one. Actually,
it was kind of like it was two annoying guys reaching an annoying.
That's one of the. I know. I'll be honest. I thought Dwight just kind of. By the way, how about Dwight's flagrant because he gets mad?
Yeah,
and then it was like a run. Like that was
Dwight,
actually.
How about Dwight playing? Why is Dwight in this game? What are you doing, Doc Rivers?
Doc did not switch it up. He did not. He went with the Harris bench guys. And when it's that, Harris tries to seek out a small player. And then when that action doesn't work, then everybody's kind of lost looking at each other. But yeah, I have my respect for Trae, the toughness part, because I think it always is in the playoffs. You go, I mean, here we are looking at guys that are supposedly stars or supposed to be stars or projected to be some of these top players in the league. And then they're not long-term legacy, but their immediate legacy. Their day-to-day legacy has been trashed. So if those are the rules and that's what we're doing, and even with Trey's shooting night, you got to, if we're doing like updates like a Facebook status here on players' legacies, you got to update Trey's to being like, that's a guy I actually trust in a big moment now. And we didn't know until we get to see it. And, you know, to go into Philly and be that guy, I have way more respect for him.
Also,
I didn't know. So go ahead.
You have Simmons and Thibault basically taking turns on him. You have Embiid protecting the rim. And your shot's not going in. You're also a seven-game series. You've been playing every other day. And something's going on with his shoulder, because every time he comes off, they're like heating his shoulder or doing whatever. But he kept coming and coming. What's funny about this is you'd think like, man, well, at least we don't have to play a team like that again. And now you go to the next round, you got Jrue Holiday, who I think is the best defensive, you know, small guard in the league. They have him. They have the same kind of rim protection, stuff like that. So it's not getting any easier for him. But I just think, and this is why I never thought he was like a great shooter. This is why the Curry thing drives me crazy. And this is why I keep saying he's more Nash 2.0 to me. What makes him special is like, he's kind of a streak shooter. It's the playmaking that is what makes him special, and those lobs and the way the one-handed half-court passes, things like that. With his shot, it's like it comes and goes. He can score 20 and a quarter, or he could go, you know, 1 for 14 and a half. I don't think he's a dead-eye shooter like Curry or Dame or any of those guys. He's not in that class. He can make 30-footers every once in a while, but I think there's this misperception with him like he's Steph, and he's just not. He's not the same shooter. He brings different stuff to the table.
I forget what the numbers were, but like when he first started doing it, I was like, why is he doing this? Is he just doing it to show like you can do it? It'd be like going to some of those pre-draft camps where I'd watch a center like bring the ball up to court and pull up from 26 feet and clank it, and then look at the scouts like, hey, I took it, you know, like that's in my game. And he makes, I don't know what the numbers are, but it feels like Trey makes him enough to keep you honest on it. But it was a body type thing. It was a skinny body, a guy who looks like he's 15 years old, just like Steph looked like when he first came to the league. So it's an eye test similarity. But shooting wise, I mean, look, we shouldn't be comparing anybody to Steph this entire time. Here's a question I have for you, though. If Atlanta wins the whole thing, will that actually, look, a championship's a championship. But Atlanta winning it compared to the Clippers, Phoenix, or Bucks winning it, and I'll feel bad for Atlanta on this one, as bad as you can for a city that wins an NBA title if it happens. But that will lead to the most non-Atlanta associated people being like, okay, well, this championship's a total joke. I mean, if what just happened to the Heat, and some of it's a carryover, like what you do the next year, but if Atlanta of the four ends up winning a title, this title would be more disrespected than any of the other three teams. And I'm not saying that's right, but I think it's what happens.
I did all the work on this, and I'm glad you brought this up. I do. I also agree with you that I think the Hawks could win the NBA title.
Can you believe we're saying really this right now?
I need to know what I'm getting from Bogdanovich. Like, did he tweak his knee, or is it something where he's just not going to like cross him off for the rest of the series? We don't have
21 minutes tonight. Not much.
Didn't look right. And
not
in
great
the fourth quarter, they didn't play him. But I just think the way it's worked out, where the 2021 postseason, I thought Brooklyn and the Lakers were the two best teams. The Lakers end up at a seventh seed because it's a shorter season. LeBron gets hurt. Brooklyn loses Kyrie and Harden during that Bucks series and almost wins it anyway. And you think like what we talked about earlier, like it's so clear now Brooklyn was by far the best team. Like the fact that they almost made it anyway is nuts. You have the Clippers who lost Kawhi. We don't know when he's coming back. You have Utah who loses Mitchell. Then he comes back. He's hurt. Playing well, but still not 100%. And then Conley misses the first five games and is a shell of the sixth game. You have Embiid with a torn ligament. You have the Suns, who are completely healthy until CP3 gets COVID. We have no idea when he's coming back. You have the Warriors, who don't have Klay Thompson all season. And you have Denver, who loses Jamal Murray like a month and a half before the playoffs. And I think could have been a sleeper in this. I went through and I was trying to find if there was ever a weirder postseason than this. And I'll give you the answer in a little bit, but I just wanted to lay that out for you. This has a chance to go down as the weirdest postseason we've had since 1978. And the reason I bring up 1978, which I'll go through later, Seattle makes the finals. Seattle had Dennis Johnson, Gus Williams as their backcourt, both young. They had Sikma as their center. He'd been in the league like 2 years. Lonnie Shelton, Marvin Webster, who's playing for this huge contract that the Knicks end up giving to him. It's a young team that was 5-17 and changed their coach, fired Bill Russell, hired Lenny Wilkins, and then got their shit together and just started taking down really good teams. And all of a sudden we're in the finals, went to a game 7 and almost beat Washington. My point is, this has happened before where we look at a team like the Hawks, like, oh, they won't make the finals. That's crazy. And then it's just like, you know what? Sometimes you have fucking crazy years. So to answer your question, I think it's conceivable they could win the title. I'm not predicting it. If I had to pick a team right now, I would still pick the Clippers. Assuming Kawhi's going to come back at some point. But if you're telling me Kawhi might not come back, now I don't know who to pick. Because from what I saw from Milwaukee last round, they barely made it. I don't trust them either. I don't trust any of these teams, Russillo.
Yeah, when you were talking about like, well, hey, you get through Philly, but now it's Drew Holiday. Drew made some shots at the end of game 7. But
he did.
You know, part of it defensively, it sucked when he got stuck with Durant because nobody's stopping him. But then when it's just that much of a size mismatch, even if you hold up and Drew's strong and he's stout and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't always love the way Drew played Harden when Harden came back in.
Like, yeah, it's one of those like, things what? Where, yeah, it's like, is he as elite as he used to be defensively, or is he a little bit older now? Because I feel like guys are going by him a little bit.
I just don't think he had like a good understanding of how to defend Harden, which sounds stupid because it's just two guys on a podcast. So I regret saying it halfway through the sentence. But you're like, look, Harden's going to get into you. He can't really move. So you don't have to worry. Like when you're playing right up on somebody, that's usually because you don't expect them to go past you. So
it's hard to play right that close to Harden, though, because he's.
He's so crafty. Like, you're going to end up in fouls. And Drew's in foul trouble.
Yeah.
He's in foul trouble the whole time. And you're like, why are you contesting him like he's somebody that you're trying to contain when you're probably already going to be able to like, I don't know. It was just really weird. Or because he felt like he still had to worry about him, his shooting threat. But I
think Harden
really,
psychs dudes out.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't love it.
You ever watch video of when those guys can like grab a snake? And you go like, wow.
I don't watch those snakes.
You've never seen that on YouTube where they could grab a snake's head and you're like, wow, that was amazing. How did they have reflexes like that? I can't believe anybody can do that. I feel the same way. Anytime somebody's trying to guard Harden where they're close to him, because it just seems like he has 17 tricks to get a foul, right?
Well, because they call him all.
You put your hand out, he immediately puts his arm underneath and throws his arm up play.
The big one is like grab your arm and then pull you into him and then he flails backwards. And you think like, I just don't understand why the refs can't be like, all right, you got me that one. But next time you do that same motion, even if I can't seem the arm hook, I'm not giving you the call. But they just keep giving it to him.
I think he psychs dudes out. I think they don't want to get fouled. Then you're chasing him around on a screen. And Harden has this way of he brings you toward the guy who's screening. So then when the guy screens you, he jostles you and knocks you into Harden, who then flails. Like I've never seen anybody more successfully draw more types of fouls.
Well, that one's ridiculous too, because you're seeing something that's happening and Trey does it. I mean, these are the two culprits. They're not the only guys, but they're the headliners. And that's why Woj's report that came out last week specifically mentioned Trey and Harden. But there's some of these calls now where I know this sounds stupid because you're not going to stop trying to go over screens against good shooters. But the way they'll call it, like there's sometimes I'm like, so what am I supposed to do now? Never go over the top of the screen? Because if the idea is that I can't make any kind of like contact as I'm fighting over the screen, then I give up. So that's, look, the Harden call for Lopez, I don't know. I already mentioned this in part one. I'm sorry if I did. But Capers reviewed it and it ended up being the free throws that made it 106-104 in the Nets game that they won. Game 5 when Harden came back and Milwaukee didn't attack him the entire game.
Yeah.
That call was massive. And you're going, look, all he did was get into Brook Lopez's body and then he fell down and you gave him the two free throws that put him up 106-104 at the end of the game. Like that's a huge, huge moment. I just wish the league would say, hey, if guys start falling down and you don't quite see what happened and it's also maybe going to decide, I don't know, fucking game 5.
Yeah. Maybe don't whistle that.
Don't give him the free throws. Because he didn't even have the ball.
the thing with Holiday, Trae Young traditionally is the type of guy that he's been very good at shutting down. Like, he's always played Dame well, people like that.
Booker, he did a really good job on, yeah. I remember.
So that could be a tough one. But talking about crazy postseasons, I mean, we should mention KD wins game seven, but his foot is on the line by what, 5 inches?
5 inches? No.
3 inches?
Centimeters, maybe?
He does the game-winning shot. Doesn't matter. The Bucks win in overtime.
Did you see the picture of Claxton, by the way, when the bench is going crazy thinking they won the game and Claxton's just like totally deadpan holding up two fingers? Like, as if, like, that makes me think something's wrong with you. Like, hey, refs, that was a two. That's like that commercial that never made any sense that I think,
like,
was
thanks for the help, Claxton.
Some religious school where it was like, hey, coach, it was off me.
So, like, we had that. We had.
You didn't see that? Okay.
Which call? Which commercial?
Nothing. Just see, keep going. Just keep
going. I was going to my next point.
I know you were.
I know. I killed you. I just did. I no-sold one of your things. Do it again. I want to hear it. Kyle, leave this in.
Do you remember the ad where no one could understand it when it was like a play? It's like a high school game and there was an out of bounds and the ref like gives it to the team and the team goes back to the huddle and the coach is like, all right, you know, we're going to win the game. We got to make sure what's going on. And then the player looks at coach. He's like, coach, it was off me. And coach is like looking at him being like, there's a real lesson here. It's a teaching moment. And the whole team's looking at the kid. And then the kid goes up to the ref for the first time in the history of fucking anything where he goes to the ref. He's like, hey, it was off me. And the ref's like, all right, ball's the other way. And then it's like, that's the lesson. And I think it had to have been a religious thing.
For bounty towels?
Or it was for towels. Yeah, it was one of those. One of the two things. And people have been fascinated with this ad for years. You've never seen this ad.
I remember it, but it was what, 10, 15 years ago?
Who's to say?
A while ago.
Scholars have argued it's timeless.
Well, when you're talking weird postseason, KD wins the series, then he didn't. Utah chokes up 25 in game six with no Kawhi, and it's going back to game seven, and they're going to win. Philly loses three games at home, including game five and game seven, including a game where they're up 20 plus with 15 minutes left. Coach Bud was fired. Rick Carlisle was the new Bucks coach, and then they ended up winning the series.
Do you think if Durant's foot's behind the line, Bud is the coach tomorrow?
No, I think they fire him as he's walking off the court. And then you have the Suns who are in it. After game three against the Lakers were -800 favorites to win the series. They were 8-1 favorites to advance over Phoenix. And we've had this a few times in the playoffs where a good thing to remember, gamblers for down the road, like maybe don't overreact after two games of some of these lines. Anyway, here's what happened in 1978. Our Washington beat Seattle in seven games. This was the year Bill Walton, Portland was 50-10. Bill Walton was the best player in the world. They'd won the title year before he hurts his foot. He goes out. They're 50-10 without Bill Walton and ends up doesn't come back. They lose to Seattle in six. Seattle also beats LA back when they did the three-game series. Remember those? The best two out of three?
Oh, yeah.
They beat LA. And that was that Lakers season where Kareem punched Kent Benson and broke his hand and was out for like 30 games. And then Kermit Washington gets in the fight with Tom Janovich, gets suspended for however long. They have to trade Kermit Washington. They get nothing back. And you have this Lakers team that, in my opinion, the best four teams that year, I actually did the research, were the Lakers, decimated, Portland, Walton goes down, and then Philly and San Antonio. So in the conference finals, everyone thinks it's going to be Philly and San Antonio or Philly and Denver. And it ends up Denver is in the conference finals against Seattle. And everybody's going, cool, Julius Erving against David Thompson. This will be amazing. It ends up being Washington-Seattle. You could argue that neither team was a top five team that year. Not a top five. So that, to me, that's the weirdest one of all time, that you have a team that went 5-17 and made game seven in the NBA finals, that none of the top five teams were in there. But I think we're going to be remembering 2021 the same way. I think we're going to look back at this and be like, what the fuck? How? Look at all the stars that aren't in the playoffs as we're down to four teams. You're basically like, I think like nine of the best 11 players in the league aren't in the final four.
Yeah, I mean, we knew when it started, it was going to be, what, the first new champ since Philly in 83? Like that was the most recent champ of the teams that were still alive going into these rounds.
Well, dude, go through the four now. Milwaukee's last win was 50 years ago. Atlanta's never made the finals.
Nothing. And Phoenix has been in the finals twice.
Right. So you have no title in the last 50 years for any of the four teams. And two of the teams have never made the NBA finals.
If Paul is back, which he's going to be, and Phoenix beats the Clippers and beats whoever comes out of the East, there will be a, hey, Chris Paul was always that dude, love fest parade for him, okay? And Booker will now be, hey, is he a top 10 player? Because those are the rules. If Milwaukee figures out some of their offensive stuff here and turns it into a funneling tray into size versus size versus size, and Bogdanovich isn't healthy, and then Milwaukee beats whoever comes out of the West, I think there'll be a, hey, you guys were too hard on Giannis. And by the way, just in case Ben Simmons has like a really nice round two game in 2022, can we hold off on that internet Ben Simmons apology form that people already have ready to go? Because I mean, just remember tonight, if we start printing those up on the old dot matrix. So I'll tell you, I know what you're saying right now, but never underestimate the narrative part of kind of the big hug that we give everybody that ends up at the end, where the Atlanta one will be weird because it'll be so new that you're like, wait, what the hell's, what just happened?
I think Atlanta winning or the Clippers winning without Kawhi would lead people to think this was the dumbest, not dumbest, the most incomprehensible playoffs we've had. Phoenix wins, you could talk yourself into a narrative of, well, they maybe, you know, Chris was hurt those first three Laker games. Maybe they were the best team all along. And if Milwaukee wins, now it's the narrative of, well, Giannis is the best player in the league.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird?
And because we flipped that one. Yeah. I'm going to read you. So when we did our top 40 exercise last week, I had these players as the 11 guys that stood out. Kevin Durant out of the playoffs. Jokic out. Luka out. Giannis in. Embiid out. Leonard injured. LeBron out, Curry out, Dame out, Davis out, Harden out. So we have one of the top 11 is left, and plus Kawhi, who's hurt. And then the next level was Tatum, Mitchell, Trey, Booker, Williamson. Two of those.
Will this, someone this is, write? Go ahead.
This is not. This is the opposite of what we're told, right? Superstars win titles. Superstars bring you to the finals. This is the opposite of what's happening.
Okay, but my other rule is this. Because something happened doesn't mean it's anything. So whoever writes what you really want to do after this championship, because Atlanta is the only, like, they didn't have any all-stars. And I think they're the only
or
team
all
without
NBA
an all
guys.
Yeah. There's a stat here. I'll actually pull it up because I saved it. But Atlanta making the conference finals, the second team in the current playoff format without an all-star since the Pacers in 1994. And even that playoff format's actually a little different. So you go all the way back to 84, Pacers are the first team ever to do it, but it's, you could still argue it's not the exact same playoff format because of the first round of the extended games.
Can you imagine being a Hawks fan? As we covered in part one, not a lot of positive Hawks memories since they got to Atlanta. You had the Nick Bird shootout. You had a couple 90s teams that were frisky.
Josh Smith draft suit. I'm just here to win championships.
There was a 60-win Hawks team at one point.
We covered that.
This is the greatest, I think, moment in the history of the Hawks. Not counting St. Louis.
Bullet Bob Pettit.
No?
I'm with you. Because it's their guy. I mean, they got dumped on forever. I mean, Trae Young's perfect for the city now because he's the guy that got laughed out of summer league. Yeah. And every Hawks fan that's been coming for our heads for years now, I mean, those guys are... I mean,
you can't. I'm on the bandwagon. Plus, I have them at 80. I have them at 85-1 to win the title. How many people can say that?
Oh, my God. Has his dad started tweeting at us yet?
No. Rayford, we're on your side, buddy. We love your son. Your son won us over. It's fine. It was a roller coaster ride, but he won us over.
Love would be strong. I respect the hell out of him.
I respect Alvin as well. Weirdest postseasons. Just quickly. Actually, let's take a break and I'll run through this fast.
This episode is brought to you by Taco Bell. If you're anything like me during a busy day at work, I need lunch that is just as fresh as it is delicious and easy. And the all-new Cantina Chicken menu from Taco Bell is exactly that. Made with high-quality ingredients like seasoned slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, shredded purple cabbage, and avocado verde salsa sauce. The new Cantina Chicken Tacos, Burrito, and Quesadilla are the perfect daytime choice. Try the new Cantina Chicken menu at Taco Bell now.
We got to talk Bucks Nets. Weirdest postseasons. 2015 was pretty weird. Golden State over the banged up Cavs. KD had a broken foot. Clippers choked. The 60 win Hawks made the Final Four and then got annihilated. The 1999, the lockout season. I do feel like when I look at some of this stuff, I'm always like, did the right team win? And for the
lockout,
time,
Knicks one is a good one because, I mean, Miami had the best record in the East. They're the one seed. But the Knicks had lost Ewing for some time. It was the first year with Camby.
Camby
missed time. Latrell had missed some time. And then Ewing got hurt in the finals. I think the Knicks scored
Eastern 90- finals. He got hurt. That was the premiere of the Ewing theory. He
that
got
was.
Hurt. And a reader sent me this long email about this is going to be good for the Knicks. I call it the Ewing theory. And then they made the finals. But I still feel like the right team won. The Spurs are really good that year. So I don't feel like that's that crazy of a season. I only think it's weird when, you know, when you look at like the wrong team won. So like in 1981, the Celtics were the best team, but the Western Finals had the 40-42 Rockets against the 40-42 Kansas City team. And it's like, well, why did that happen? The Lakers lost the best 2 out of 3 to Houston. And then this goofy Kansas City team just beat Portland and Phoenix. And all of a sudden we had 2 40-42 teams in the West Finals. So that was weird. And then the 1976 Boston again, the Suns making the finals was weird. But most of the time, the right team wins. We don't leave it going, wow, I can't. It's not like when Leicester City won in soccer and people are like, oh my God, I can't believe. Or in the NFL, sometimes that'll happen, right? There'll be some team you're like, wow.
The Ravens? Like Sebastian Vettel winning a Grand Prix today.
Great one. Great analogy. Right. I was just about to say that. Joe Flacco winning the Super Bowl.
That's one of
the
all-timers.
I can't believe it.
But remember, Flacco,
that in the NBA.
Flacco, I'll never forget Merrill Hodge, Monday, SportsCenter, in studio. Give me your top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. Joe Flacco, number 1. And I went, see, this is my rule of the moment. In the moment, it's too much. It's too much.
Manning second?
I don't know. I don't know who he had. But Flacco was a different guy for a month.
That's another one, the 2007 Giants. Like, that stuff doesn't happen in basketball. But this year, it might happen. We might have the Hawks might be the 2007 Giants, as weird as that sounds. Three-point shooting would be NFL defense in this scenario, or a pass rush.
Even Miami in 06, I mean, my point had always been, like, if you got to pick one of the worst teams to win the finals in the last 20 years, like, that team got swept the next year, but it wasn't like they were bad.
Wade was one of the three best players in the league. They had Riley. They still had Shaq. They had some vets.
The Warriors 15 won. When you look at, I mean, they won a million games.
They
first
won 67 and 15 that year.
So there's that. And then, you know, Kyrie plays really only that one game. But Cleveland.
Love was hurt too.
Love had already been hurt, obviously, in the Boston series. But that was also, you remember, Golden State went down 2-1 to Memphis, and people were kind of like, they were anti-Golden State. We're like, see, this is what happens. You hit him in the mouth, completely ignoring all of Golden State's defensive statistics. And then they rolled through them. Houston came back in that weird series against the Clippers. And then, you know, they completely took care of. By the way, I was looking at that. Like, Harden's second scores. That was when it was still, they were trying to figure out the Dwight Harden combo and, like, who was going to win the locker room. And the Kevin McHale stuff. And those two guys were like dividing the locker room, and Howard wanted more touches and all that kind of stuff. But like, it wasn't wrong that Golden State won. It was just sucked that Cleveland was that hurt.
Well, but then KD had the broken foot that year too. Like, they're major guys either missing or their team's self-combusted for weird reasons.
There's usually always one or two though. Yeah. It's usually not all top 10 players except for one.
This is a surreal postseason.
Absolutely.
Bucks Nets. So, it's weird to think that the story coming out of a series was a guy on the team that lost, but I just thought Durant was so unbelievable in that series. I actually moved him up my all-time rankings.
Okay, where?
I jumped him over a couple of people.
Give me your updates then. I gotta know this.
I got him 10th. I moved him up to 10. I had him jump a couple centers.
He jumped Moses?
Moses and Shaq and Hakeem. Couldn't believe I was doing it. I just think like I was looking at, I'm looking at my list and I'm like, how do I only have one guy from the last 20 years in the top 12? When basketball, we all agree, is probably harder to play now and is played at a higher level these days because of the shooting. I've even had people that played in the 80s and 90s are like, the shot making is just better now. Like anybody from my era who says that it's not is fooling themselves. And the stuff Durant, you know, you think like what he was doing in 2019 and what he was doing this year. And the fact that really he should have, I think, four rings. I think they would have won in 19. And I think they would have won easily this year. And that's the woulda, coulda, shoulda thing you can do with every player. But he has two rings and people are going to hang them. That he chased them, Golden State, he joined 73 win team, all that stuff. But he really should have won this year too and in 2019. And he's one of the best two-way players I've ever seen. He's one of the best scorers, period. He's the best scoring forward I've ever seen. And that shot he hit, which the announcers missed. So they're down two. He's dead because he's played 48 minutes. Played 48 minutes four nights before. He knows he has nothing left in the tank. They're coming out of a timeout. They call a play for him to shoot a three because he's like, I don't know if I'm guessing. Didn't talk to him. He didn't have anything left in the tank for overtime. It's like, we have to win this game now. Let's run the play where you throw me the lob and I turn around. I do a 25-foot fucking turnaround and he fucking drained it. And the only thing that he didn't win the game on was because the tip of his toe was over the line. That was unbelievable. It was one of the greatest shots in the history of the league. But his foot was on the line. And I think you could tell from his body language that he didn't have an overtime in him.
And I don't think anyone, by the way, no one on the court had an overtime in him.
I was worried Giannis was going to like pass out. Giannis was about as tired as I've ever seen a superstar. He was like almost keeled over some of those dead balls.
Well, he got subbed out early and Jared Greenberg, who was reporting on it, he tweeted out immediately. He's like, hey, Giannis is gassed. Like he could see him. And then we saw a video coming back from the commercial where you could see, and by the way, both networks are making up for all the commercial stuff in a big way. Like we're coming back late and then some of these sideline reports, we get the in-screen thing and then you miss two possessions. Like just have it be audio over the game. Have the coach thing be audio over the game because it just kind of sucks when you get the smaller box and then the major announcer, the main announcers can't call the action. You're like, you'll miss some possessions. I mean, it drives me crazy. So we saw video of Giannis just gasping and you're like, all right, I don't know if Durant planned on the turnaround. I think it was just kind of like, I got to try to get free and get any kind of space whatsoever.
And no, you got to watch again. That was a set play. They were trying to do that. And I think he wanted to take a three. I really do.
I'm not saying that he didn't want to take a three. I'm saying on the turnaround part of it, it was so hard. It was such a difficult shot.
Right.
I don't think that's what he wanted to do. I got to go back and look at it again then. But I felt for Durant because he had no help. Joe Harris couldn't make a shot. Harden, who was actually okay and a little bit more aggressive, looked the healthiest he had been all week. Yeah. And he, you know, look, another Harden flame out in a big spot, but he's going to get the pass because of the hamstring. But when I had said, hey, I kind of feel for Harden because I still don't know what to do with Milwaukee, I completely underestimated the reaction for the Nets hate. I feel like Durant didn't have any help game seven.
You said you fell for Durant, not Harden.
Yeah, I fell for Durant. Yeah, right. Good correction there. I fell for Durant because of game seven. But then it turned into, oh, well, he picked this team. And they were like, hey, I'm in the moment guy right now, okay? That's all I'm doing. And people still, like, they let their hatred for him go into Golden State and then Brooklyn get in the way of appreciating him. It's very different. It's very different from just straight hatred for a different player. I don't know.
It was one of the most heroic game seven, like just losing a series in seven games performances. Like in 1969, Jerry West won finals MVP, even though his team lost in seven to the Celtics. And Havlicek should have won the MVP. It's a kind of a travesty, but West was so good in that series that they were like, let's give it to Jerry. He can't win the title. At least he could have this. It was stupid. Durant was the MVP of this series. And yet, I was so impressed by Giannis because, look, Giannis it goes back to that 90-10 thing we talked about sometimes when I wrote that Westbrook column about everybody's got the 10% that kind of is you can nitpick with. And for some guys, it's more glaring than other guys. Giannis's 10% is the most glaring right now of any superstar. But I don't know if you can ask for more from your best player in a game than what he did, where it seemed like every time they threw him the ball on the left side, he either got a shot for himself or created a shot for somebody else. And I think the only reason they weren't doing it every time was because he was so dead. So that was when they would run like Chris Middleton action, stuff like that. Holiday was a no-show. Lopez was pretty good for him. Other than that, they had nobody that you trusted. They basically had 3.5 guys. And Giannis was in the mid-30s every game. He was an unbelievable, athlete stuff, quarter after quarter after quarter. And, you know, there was that weird storyline about why isn't he guarding Durant? The fourth quarter, you got to come out and guard him. It's like, do you guys see all the shit Giannis is doing? Like, this guy is playing 40-plus minutes a game, and he's doing everything. Like, we can't also ask him to guard the best player on the other team. I thought Giannis was great. And, I think that was a career changer for him. Because I think if they go out in round two, it looks a lot like the Sixers part of the podcast that we did at the top, where we're like, the process is dead. Like, we're just like, we're coming in with conclusions. If Giannis is out in game two, I think, or round two again, I think we would have had to make some conclusions from that. And they fended it off. And now, you know, they should win the East unless they really fucked this up.
And when you look at the 7-game stats, 32, 13, and almost 4 assists, throwing a block, 57% from the floor overall. The free throw percentage thing is a problem, 48%. But the difference is, you know, like when you're, if you had the spectrum of players, like he has more of the Ben Simmons lacking skill part of his offense than like a Durant. When that whole Durant controversy got started up, like you can kind of watch in that series why a guy like Durant would be like, don't ever compare me to him, even yeah. though Durant said he never said it. I guess I'm still a little worried, even though like you read those numbers back, you're like, what the hell's the problem with you guys? But like, I'm telling you, there are playoff series that you'll watch and you'll be like, I don't know, like this guy wasn't as good or this guy wasn't as good. And then a couple years removed, you'll look back at the 7-game line and you're like, oh my gosh, that guy was crazy. Like, how come everybody beat up on him? And you're like, well, who's right? The numbers guy or the guy that remembers watching it going, maybe you're watching it with some sort of biased lens, which is also another problem. But I love that Giannis cares. I love that he fights his ass off. You know, I think those parts are real. Like there, when you want to say, oh, his limitations offensively trend more to Simmons, at least Simmons is checked out. We learned that multiple times and never more than game 7. Giannis would never do that, right? Giannis would never do that. But I'm still just a little afraid of that left extended. It's not on the block, but it's on the left side, you know, kind of at the angle. 10, 12 feet out, and it's like, all right, figure something out. And it's usually just his physical gifts get him the angle.
I felt like in game 7, he kind of got it going from that side, though.
He did.
He was either going into the jump hook or he was just drop stepping into like a layup or dunk. You made the key point. He really, really, really gives a shit, and he's really competitive. And we can pick apart flaws of a lot of great guys. Shaq had him. I think Shaq's 12th or 13th best player of all time. The dude had real flaws. He couldn't stay in shape. He would disappear sometimes on defense. Smaller teams could pull him out and fuck with him when he was on defense. And he didn't want to get fouled in the last 4 minutes, which is why Kobe was so important. And yet he was like the 13th best player ever. I think with Giannis, if your foundation is this guy gives a shit as much as anyone else on the court, and this guy is not afraid of this game in any way, shape, or form, like, he airballed 2 free throws in that game and still made big free throws down the stretch. Like, he wasn't afraid of the game. And, you know, he's only 26. He's been playing basketball, since he was 12? It feels like there's room for him to grow. And I thought that was a huge test for him. I really felt like he gave every single ounce of his body to that game. And I don't know how you can criticize that. So he's a huge winner, and Durant's a huge winner. And then Lopez...
That block he had, immense. The block on Durant was one of the biggest plays of the game. He had another block in there earlier too, but you know, the second one was so huge. Go ahead.
Coming off a disastrous inbounds. I mean, they had...
Oh my God, what the hell was that? That wasn't even Lopez's fault.
Except it was just the whole play was bad.
That was the right corner, if you were trying to remember here. There was like 2 seconds, maybe 1:08 on the shot clock. And
well, Giannis, go backwards. They get they run a whole 24 off, get a terrible shot, but somehow get a rebound. Holiday freezes for like 10 seconds for reasons that remain unclear, and then gets a terrible thing. It goes out of bounds. So now they've spent 36 seconds to get nothing. And then they have to throw it into Lopez. When didn't you think they were just going to have Giannis cut into the basket like a tight end?
Okay, they tried
the ball in traffic.
The announcers were like, hey, look, Blake Griffin, to his credit, he battled his ass off.
Yep.
That guy holds on every single play. I mean, he had a play, the first bucket the Nets scored in overtime. It was an offensive rebound, I think. And Blake was behind Giannis, and he just ripped him to the ground and then never even called it. And Giannis is sitting there with his hands up going like, are you serious? So on that inbound, if you watch it, he's on the right free throw side. Not, you know, he's the right side of the lane, not the free throw line. And Giannis looks like he has an open cut, but Blake is just grabbing him. And that's where I think the inbounder, I think it was Drew, freaked out a bit. And then
Blake just kind of panicked.
Right. And Brooke catches it. And I think Brooke, it's a brutal spot to put him in, but I also don't think Brooke knew that there was still like less than 2 seconds left on the shot clock, because he actually like thought about making some sort of move and then threw it up. And you're just like, all right, so the Bucks are going to lose this one. So yeah, I'm sorry. Like,
They're up four, net score, come down. You waste 38 seconds. You don't get a shot at all. And that leads to Durant with his foot on the line. And if he makes that shot with his foot not being on the line, the Bucks lose. That goes down in history as one of the worst last minute losses. You know, we're comparing that to Kings Lakers game 7-02 and Blazers Lakers 2000, all like the worst losses ever. It immediately moves in there.
Yeah. And then Drew, if you look at his numbers, 36% from the floor for the series.
But how crazy was it that when they really, really absolutely had to have him, he made 3 shots in a row.
He was due.
Remember that? In the fourth quarter, it was like, all right, if he doesn't do anything, they're going to lose. And then just miraculously, he made a three and a floater and something else. And that was really all he did offensively the whole game. But it was like the only time that they really needed him or they're going to lose, because Giannis was dead at that point.
Yeah, but like where Trey was missing shots in game 7 and you go, okay, he's going to hit some, and it still looked fine, even though he was missing everything. When he hit the side of the backboard, when it looked like he didn't know what he wanted to do, I felt like mentally, so that was a great recovery from him. And hopefully it's kind of one of those deals where like, hey, you got lucky. You got through an awful series, but even, you know, you can't overlook Atlanta here, but he got to figure he's going to revert a little bit back to a guy that keeps you honest with his shooting. And he did not do that against Brooklyn.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about this game, but let's take one more break. This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. 7-time world champion, modern day legend, my favorite quarterback ever, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. It's going to be hosted by Kevin Hart, and Tom Brady will get his cleats held to the fire by famous friends, frenemies, the Roastmaster himself, Jeff Ross. It's going to be an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady live only on Netflix. All right, Bucks Nets game 7, which we've had 7 game 7s ever went into overtime. Do you know this? Only 7 history of the league.
Yeah, I knew it was a low number because it had been a long time, right?
1957 finals, Celtics beat the Hawks, 3 OTs. Tommy Heinsohn fouls out, cries on the sideline. They win anyway. 1962 finals. Frank Selvey's shot is going to win it for the Lakers. He misses. Celtics win in OT. 1990 semifinals. Portland, San Antonio. That was the one where Rod Strickland did the crazy pass, threw it to nobody. Portland ends up winning. 1993 semis. Houston beats Seattle. 2002 Western Conference finals. People forget this. Lakers Kings in Sacramento goes to OT, and the Kings played the end of the fourth and OT with their hands wrapped around their necks. 2006 semis, Dallas San Antonio. We actually did a Book of Basketball podcast about this. This game's unbelievable. It's the one where Dallas is down 20 seconds left. Dirk 3-point play ties it, go to OT, they win. And now we have this Milwaukee Brooklyn game. I think what was really unique about this game and made it, in my opinion, an ESPN classic game, even though it wasn't necessarily the greatest played game I've ever seen, was I can't remember seeing guys more tired on both sides when we knew there was five more minutes of basketball. Because it felt like everybody was tired in the fourth quarter. It started to look like a prize fight. Like one of my favorite rant, like, as you know, I like to go on YouTube sometimes and watch old boxing matches.
And snake grabbers.
Yeah, and snake grabbers. Holmes Norton, late 70s, where they're fighting for the vacated title. In the last couple of rounds, they're both dead. And they're just throwing haymakers. And it looks like the end of Rocky. They got nothing left. And sometimes you have those boxing fights where both guys are dead. They still have to fight two more rounds. And they're just like basically throwing, you know, all arm punches. That's what that Nets-Bucks game, it was actually like a really poorly played overtime, you know, for the most part, because both teams were just dead. At one point, it looked like the Bucks weren't going to score in the entire overtime. And then they finally got stuff at the end. But I've personally never seen a basketball game like that. You've seen it like triple OT. Like if you watch Celtics Suns from 1976, by the third overtime, guys are sitting on the floor between free throws and shit like that. But in modern era, no, I can't remember.
Okay, but think about this. As you just said, the last bucket in regulation was with 1:54 left. Jrue Holiday makes a jumper. They did not score a field goal again until 1:12 left in overtime. So they went almost 6 minutes without a bucket, and Brooklyn scored 2 points total in overtime. So you're absolutely right.
And Durant was done. I mean, nobody's allowed to hang his 0-for-4 or whatever he did in the overtime because the guy had nothing left. And I really honestly believe that's why they went for the three at the end, because I think he knew, and what he did 5, 6, 7, the amount of minutes that he played, having to also protect the rim, be the number one rebounder on his team, and then basically create every scoring chance was nuts. So couple other things. I got to criticize my guy Nash a little bit. I love Steve Nash. I just think when you're game 7 at home, your biggest advantage is your energy bench guys for little 5-minute spurts, because I think bench guys feed off that crowd. You saw it with Terrence Mann in the Clippers game. Not that he's more than a bench guy, but there's an energy thing that you can kind of tap into. And they have guys who can do that. Claxton, Tyler Johnson, TLC. I'm throwing those guys out in the second quarter for 4 minutes to see if I can get go on a little run, try to change the pace. There was, if you look at the amount of how many field goals did Brooklyn have in that game? Like just total. Because one of the things they did was they slowed it down to the point where the possessions were like,
like 84 almost, attempts to 98 from Milwaukee.
84 attempts in a overtime game. Think about that. So they were like in the 70s for regulation, which the way basketball is played now, usually the teams are in like the high 80s. I just would have brought in energy guys. And then I also thought they should have called a timeout with in the overtime because their guys were dead. With 11 seconds left, they got the ball back. Timeout. They had one. Set up a play. Give Durant 3 minutes of rest. It's going to actually be 5 minutes because you're going to get all the TV timeouts. Normally, I'm in favor of like, you know, let your best players decide the game. This is why you have practice. But in this case, like get Durant a rest. And I bet he would do that over again if he had to.
I'm surprised, though, to hear you saying you'd rather see a bunch of guys out there that, aren't ever comfortable in that moment before. I'm not disagreeing with anything else you've said.
I want energy. Just give me 4 minutes of just give me some energy and see if I can get the crowd, you know, ignite the game in a slightly different way, because I know the Bucks are only playing 7 guys. So I'm saving my guys for a couple minutes and I'm just energy, pressure. Have Tyler Johnson guard Jrue Holiday full court for 3 minutes. I think you can do that when you're home. That's my only case.
I'm watching the shot again right now.
Yeah.
I still can't believe that was their inbound with 2.1 on the shot clock.
Which one?
On the Lopez screw up, which, you know,
oh, again, God.
Was kind of everybody collectively.
Yeah.
I think they just threw it to Durant and he kind of got turned around as he was driving on PJ Tucker. So I don't think the turnaround had anything to do with it. I would agree with you about the 3-pointer, but I'd also say that we kind of joked throughout the year that there was some rule pass that when you're down 2, it doesn't count unless it's a 3.
Yeah. Can I give you, my buddy Hench said this to me, Kyrie's last 5 years.
Oh, this is going to, I was looking at this because Bobby Marks did an incredible contract extension piece up on ESPN.com that I'd like to throw a couple numbers at you. But yeah, go ahead, because I know where this is going.
Game 5, Golden State sucked. 2017 finals. 2018 injured. 2019 is just horrific in the Milwaukee series. 20 and 21 injured. Now, the injury this year wasn't his fault. I'm just pointing out that's half a decade. And 2016, he hits one of the great shots in the history of the league. And it goes beyond that, because people are always like, oh, he hit the shot. It's actually like, if you're going to really talk about that 16 team, it's got to be game 5, 6, and 7. Because game 5, him and LeBron, they both went over 40.
Yeah, what those guys did. No Draymond.
No Draymond, but that was like outrageous. Game 6, same thing. So I feel like he almost gets shorted on that series for how unbelievable he was. But you got to say, since then, like, his career's kind of been disappointing for what the potential of it seemed to be in 2016, right? Now, some of that's bad luck. He changed teams. He had some injuries. But now, what is he?
Well, I don't think it's unfair to go, hey, your last half decade of playoffs have not ended well.
Yeah.
Because of your inability. I'll throw this at you.
Just pointing it out.
With his movement and how great he is and what like a great combination, like smaller guys can just survive in this league that we've seen in a way that we weren't ever really used to. I think he's so slight now. Like, I wonder what his diet is. I wonder if he, like, clearly the basketball skill part of it, he's one of the most incredible specimens. Like, he's as special on some of the technical stuff that we've ever seen. His footwork, the handle,
yeah,
the shot creation, finishing against big guys. But like, we saw Steph bulk up this year because he kind of knew he had to take it on. I wonder if that's in Kyrie's training regimen. You know, I wonder if there's any part, because he looks really skinny to me. He looks like almost malnourished at times.
You think he's on like some weird diet?
Just, just Johnny cakes?
You think my son could take him in a wrestling match? My son is fucking jacked right now. I don't know.
I'd like to know how many. That'd be a good segment. We did that once on local radio in Boston. How many Red Sox could you beat up?
could you beat my son up? My son is now 5'7" and a half and he's fucking ripped. And I think he could officially beat me in a fight. Yeah, the Kyrie thing is just like, wow, that's half a decade where you look back and there was so much promise coming out of the 16 finals. We didn't really get there. The Joe Harris thing, I don't know how you bring him back. I know they will, and I know there's a whole Joe Harris hive and people, oh, you got to hit a bad series. But we also saw him do this in the World Championships. Anytime there's ever been pressure basketball, he sucked. And at some point, you got to wonder, like, is regular season Joe different than playoff Joe? Because if he plays even decent in this series, I think they win. If Kyrie plays all 7 games in this series, they definitely win. And if all 3 guys play in the series, it's not close.
All Joe Harris has to do is hit one more shot in game 7 and they win. So Kyrie, definitely. I mean,
how about
Kyrie
game 4? What about game 4? What was the game when he was over? Oh, game 3. He was 1 for 11 and all 11 shots were wide open. You could argue that. You're going to love this. I would have played Jeff Green over him down the stretch. I didn't think Joe Harris' shots were going in. When he's taking them, if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm like, great, Joe Harris is shooting. It's not going in.
Yeah, but usually those guys, I can't believe you went world championship on him.
What?
You went world games on Joe Harris.
He sucked. He was really bad. He couldn't make a
shot.
Maybe
he never traveled internationally before. Where were they?
Who would you have rather had if you're betting on the Nets in that game, Jeff Green or Joe Harris? Game 7. I've seen Jeff Green do it, at least.
With a minute left, you have?
Here's my last question for you.
I think he had some big shots with Houston, though, recently. So maybe Ice Green?
Is KD the best player of the last 5 years? So we go 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21. If I just said, who is the best player of the last 5 years, who would you say?
LeBron.
So you'd have LeBron, even with this season and the season in 19 when he basically took the year off.
Yeah, because Durant missed a full one and then a chunk of this one too.
Playoffs was here. So he's 4 out of 4 to 5 postseasons. Went toe-to-toe with LeBron. I'm just asking.
The last 5 seasons counts. counts the 16 finals, right?
No, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21.
All right. Math.
If we're just breaking down, like if we're going backwards, who are the best player every 5 years?
So that's have three LeBron. Finals. That's three finals and a title for LeBron.
Yes.
And it's 17, 18. It's two titles, two finals for KD. Probably
two and a half finals because he makes it in 19.
It's closer than I thought. As you first said it, because I'm thinking about
thought, right?
Right, because Durant's missed so much time. Because you can't sit there and say like, "Hey, LeBron basically took that season off." When you know, for the most part, he's certainly more durable than Durant is.
Because the funny thing is, once you start going backwards, and you just do 5 years, 5 years, 5 years, 12 to 16, it's definitely LeBron, no question. 2007 to 2011, it's Kobe, which is weird because he only won one MVP during that, and it's, by the way, that's justified. It's not like how did Kobe not win more
MVPs?
He's
got two titles in there though, right?
He has two titles in there. 2002 to 2006, it's definitely Duncan. If you go 1998 to 2002, it's Shaq. Then it's MJ basically the rest of that decade. You go backwards and you start arguing about Magic, Bird, shit like that. But it's just weird that the last 5 years we didn't have a distinctly best player, because usually we do. Usually you can point to like, oh, that guy was definitely the best. I think Durant, LeBron is neck and neck. And maybe LeBron gets the edge because Durant misses a season, but I don't know.
Yeah, it is close. It's a lot closer. And yeah, look, you like Kawhi, that
one. I'm glad I won you over.
Yeah. I mean, Kawhi, it's kind of tough to argue it with the time. Yeah, so I'm just trying to think out loud here on the fly.
Also, from a one-man show standpoint, I thought what Durant did was really special. Like, as I've said a million times, my favorite Bird season ever was the 87 Celts when everybody was hurt and he was just one-man show Bird. It was awesome. That's like the last piece. The Pantheon guys can go one-man show. You know, and that's something like when we talk about Giannis, that's the one thing he doesn't have. He'll never have that level where he can be like, I've got it, guys. I will navigate this entire game for us. Get on my back. He can carry people on his back, but he's still going to need the second guy. Anyway.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Yeah. All right? Because I don't know how much more is there something else you still want to do?
Nope.
Okay. Will you ever vote Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year again?
No. To me, it reminds me of, remember there was that year when it was the first year Kidd made the finals, and there was a huge argument about Kidd versus Duncan for MVP?
2002?
Yeah. It was back and forth. I thought it was ludicrous. I was making fun of it, I think, as it was happening. I think I was. Who knows? It was 20 years ago. But then, so Kidd finished the second.
You were in your prime back then.
My fingers worked back then. The year after, Kidd makes the finals again, basically as the same season he had the year before, but finished ninth. And it was like, what was different? It was just like, people are like, wow, Duncan really proved he was the best. What were we thinking doing with that Kidd thing? And everybody's just like, I'm off Kidd, I'm out. And I think Gobert and Simmons will be the same for Defensive Player of the Year. It would almost like, you'd have to come up with defensive stats that would show that they were so clearly dominant to everybody else that there's almost no way to avoid picking them.
Because I said after Curry, they blew the 3-1 lead, I go, this is the kind of thing where he'll never win the MVP again. And he hasn't, but I also didn't expect this kind of year. Like, I was going to say, hey, but you know what? In 5 years, there'll be this weird Warriors season where it's shortened. We'll be coming out of this national and global pandemic, and Clay will be hurt. And he's going to put this like run together where he leads the league in scoring and everybody loves Steph again and it's still efficient. So, you know, that was kind of a hard one to predict 5 years ago. But your Kidd Duncan argument is perfect because that's what's going to happen here. Like, who's going to vote Ben Simmons all NBA? Is anyone going to do that next year?
Remember there was a Peja year too where he got like first or second team all NBA. And then people are like, ooh, what did we just do? And that was it. He was out. I forgot to tell you this. I thought Herter tonight looked a little Peja-y. He was in the Peja vortex. He was in the Peja kind of vicinity with some of those moves, right? The coming off screen threes, the little post up from 15 feet. He was like pale Peja.
I think that's low. I think it's a low ceiling, but I'll take it.
Peja was really good.
He was all NBA.
I like Peja.
Didn't he get some NBA? He got some MVP love that year too. All right, I got a couple more. Will you ever say Giannis is the best player in the world?
I mean, not this year. I think Durant clinched the title, even though they lost. I think there was stuff going on with him on the left side in that game seven that I think they're going to look at the tapes. By the way, all right, hey, here's the thing. The bloggers out there who break down the games and do the breakdown stuff, do a breakdown of when they went to Giannis on the left side and they cleared out for him, what the points per possession was on that. I guess maybe I could do that on Second Spectrum. I'll look at that tonight. I thought it was unstoppable. The net, I wonder if they tapped into something with that, moving all the shooters away and just giving him the whole side.
Yeah, they've done that with him before.
I never saw them do it at crunch time like that before. Like just like where it was that unstoppable. I felt like he figured something out. I'm not kidding.
All right, last one. Will you ever vote Westbrook all second team defense again? Was that you?
Was that me? Who's that, Marv? Was that Marv's farewell vote?
I think it was Wilbon. I'm hoping Wilbon says there was a second voter theory.
That's a tough one. Who was the German guy who voted Westbrook third for MVP?
He didn't have Jokic in his top five. Like, how does the NBA, do they email him and go, hey?
But they got to take the vote. Westbrook, when you're voting Westbrook third for MVP.
Hey, Dieter.
You lose the vote. Dieter, some bad news. We respect your contributions. Unfortunately, you won't be voting for the awards this year.
Yeah, and Marv was the LeBron MVP voter. Oh, yeah. No, wait a minute. No, it was...
I thought he was the first team All-NBA voter.
He was first team All-NBA. That's right.
That was tough. That was tough. There was... We were hoping for a couple of suspects to be the actual one of that one. Wait, I had another question for you. What's your finals prediction now, knowing that we know this is the final four?
Phoenix Hawks, baby. I'm rolling with the ATL.
Like, do you really think that's going to be the finals?
No.
You think it's going to be Phoenix Hawks?
No, I mean, it feels like I have no problem on the Phoenix thing. You and I are just seeing that differently. That's fine. I kind of just want to pick the Hawks. It's, you know what I'm saying? Like, because I didn't leave that Milwaukee series going, all right, fear the deer time.
The fact that their bench is just, I guess, a zero. They feel like they put a lot of miles on their three guys. And as we've seen, there's been injuries every round. And I just think you never know.
Thank God they got PJ Tucker, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Serious. Like, he was toast. Well, this is kind of that rule that we talked about. Guys that have some pedigree that aren't 100, that are in an awful basketball situation, I think you and I have learned this year that you've got to be a little bit more open-minded about what they could bring to a team. Because I think at one point, PJ had the single worst plus-minus box score of any active player that qualified. And granted, Houston's a mess and all that kind of stuff. But when you watch it, you're like, hey, it's not quite the same when you can't just sit in the corner off all Harden's drives. But just who he is as a dude out there, knowing that they're going to be complete donuts offensively, I hope PJ Tucker gets paid again because he's been underpaid through a good chunk of his career. And thank God they have him because you're right. Rotationally, they actually just desperately need the minutes, especially when you're talking about the matchup there with Durant.
Can I zag on this?
Okay.
I actually thought, are we sure PJ Tucker was good in the last few games? Because Durant scored like 50 a game and PJ Tucker scored zero on the other end. Like how many, what did he score? 3 points a game? And then Durant did everything
points.
He wants. I think there was like a Jedi mind trick thing going on with PJ Tucker with him. Man, this guy's amazing. And then it's like, all right, look at Durant's box score. Are we sure PJ Tucker was amazing? Like, would you have been better off just playing Bryn Forbes, having Durant torch Bryn Forbes, and then at least Bryn Forbes wide open in the corner is going to make 50% of his shots? Is that a better scenario? I don't know.
Good Zach.
I thought it was good Zach. Thank you.
No, it's a really good Zach. It's a good Zach because the offensive numbers were not very good.
They're awful.
But if it's Bryn Forbes torching Durant or getting torched by Durant, although who knows, maybe Bryn Forbes is a bad matchup for KD, low center of gravity.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait until next year. But the fact that PJ made Durant work led to his fatigue.
Oh, there we
go.
Didn't
know where he was on the court. Foot is over the line.
Counter zag.
And yeah, I double zagged you. And if
good
it's
zag.
Forbes, he's far more like it's an easier catch. He hasn't expended as much energy. 3-point game. And we're wondering if a Simmons for Middleton trade makes sense.
Wow. Now that would be too much for the Bucks, right? They'd hang up.
Would you do Ogilvy and Nesmith?
Ogilvy and Nesmith for Simmons?
This is good. Tell Chris Ryan to not listen to anything for days.
Well, all right. Let's say Philly calls Sacramento and says, give us De'Aaron Fox for Simmons. Let's just call it into the league. I think Sacramento says no.
I think that was actually, I don't know who, I don't want to start any rumors here.
But Sacramento says point, no, right?
Yeah, I would say no.
So if we're just saying like top 40 guys that
Semi's a free agent, by the way. I knew that. So sorry, that trade's off.
Too bad. Yeah, it's like McCollum for Simmons. I don't know if I'm Portland. Am I doing that? No. From what
he's
I just
healthy.
Watched.
He's healthy. That'd be a plus for Portland.
Brandon Ingram? They're not doing that.
That would be awful for Zion.
Zach LaVine? No. It's like...
Aaron Gordon?
Just don't know what the trade is. Is it like a Memphis where you get like Slow-Mo and Dylan Brooks and like a 4-4? And the Memphis fans are going to get mad at me. I don't know. I don't know what the trade is. I think everyone's going to try to trade Ben Simmons this summer, and I don't know what the trade is. Because you're not... By the way, Laker fans, you're not getting him for Kuzma and Talen Horton Tucker. So stop. Stop.
Clutch? I don't know. You sure? Hey, by the way, can you imagine Simmons off the ball with Ja Morant?
Oof. Honestly, it's a team like Orlando. It's a rehabilitation thing. And you talk yourself into it like, this guy just needs his own team. Let's build a team around Ben Simmons. The same way Atlanta built a team around Trae Young. Let's build a team around all the stuff he's good at and give this guy a chance to be the focal point on a team other than this side piece. Would be
hours, right? Hours after the wake is not when to talk about his trade value. Because I think Verno was on our text thread and he had a really good point. He was like, whatever you guys think it is now. And I completely agreed with him. Like, there's just so many trades where you're determined to be like, oh, no, it's this, or this is the most you could do, or this guy sucks, or there's no market here, or this, you could get everything for this guy. And then when the trade goes through, you're like, oh, all right. Okay. There was like a little bit more in there than we thought. Doesn't that feel kind of the way the NBA market works?
Simmons for Kevin Love and Garland?
I think they'd rather do Sexton.
I think you're right. I think cooler heads will prevail.
But, it's not like Daryl's just going to give him away, by the way, either. It's Daryl.
This was the big question I had for you, and we could end on this. I think this NBA season is way more fun if Harden got traded to Philly. I think this season falls into place in a totally better way. We don't have this Brooklyn super team that feels like karma just completely submarined because the basketball gods didn't like how that team got put together. So like, fuck this, you guys are out. Harden goes to Philly. That team is now much more of a contender, and we have more answers for Harden as what he is as, you know, a top 40 all-time guy. What is he? All right. Now we've put you on a team that has defense and a center. What are you? Let's see it. Can you be the best guy on the best team? And then the Nets, we kind of saw what happened anyway without Harden, and they could have survived without him with all the pieces. I just think it's a more fun league. And then we get Simmons in Houston kind of just putting together his own band, which is going to happen somewhere anyway. I just kind of wish that trade had happened.
The NBA changed that day because it was such a weird day because early in the day here on the West Coast, they're like,
yeah,
we
both
Philly.
Had the same info.
Yeah, it looks like it's Philly. And then it was, you know, according to, you know, others that do it for a living, which is, you know, always a little dangerous for guys like us that have information, but you're kind of just conversational about it. And then it could start a whole shitstorm. So I'm glad we weren't on until it all happened. But I mean, you could just see again throughout it all that somebody that can create, somebody that can space, because I don't know. I feel like this is the same conversation for 4 years, so I don't need to keep doing it. It's kind of how I started the pod. Like, I shouldn't be surprised by any of it. I'm kind of not, but I still can't believe it happened, even though that's all I've seen. And now Atlanta's playing for a chance to get to the NBA Finals.
You were surprised by Herder a little bit. You've been following Herder's career. You were a little surprised that he turned into Peja 2.0. I didn't know he had that.
I know this about Herder when he comes to your town. All right.
Yeah.
Strap him up and hide your wife.
FanDuel odds for the title right now. Your Atlanta Hawks are 12-1. LA Clippers plus 850. Phoenix Suns plus 135. Milwaukee Bucks minus 105.
That line makes you think Vegas may be more in line with your information then.
I would say your information if the Clips are plus 850.
Oh, they're plus? Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you were saying. My bad.
Yeah, so if you did a Bucks-Suns parlay, it's about 3-1. If you're saying that is what I think the finals will be. And that would be, as we discussed last week, the Neil Walk finals. Remember?
That's a good bet. That's a good bet right there.
Yeah.
3-1 payout.
Wasilo, you got two pods coming this week. I have a draft lottery show I'm doing Tuesday night. New rewatchables coming tomorrow. We're doing Stripes.
Nice.
And then I have a Thursday pod as well. It was great to see you. What a weekend of basketball. This is certainly the weirdest postseason that the NBA has had since I was 9 years old or 8 years old. So it feels significant. Rosillo, good to see you. Enjoy the rest of Father's Day. Best of luck to the dads out there.
Lee Harvey, you are a madman. When you and your buddies stole the cow and he did it with the cow. I want to party with you.
Stripes, rewatchables. All right, good to see you, Rosillo. That's it for the pod. We will see you on Tuesday. I want to see them on the wayside.